Welcome to the Future Ready Today podcast. I'm Andy Woods, ex-science teacher and now a product manager at Pearson. In this series, I'm chatting with a range of teachers to find out how they're empowering today's learners with the skills they need for higher education and the future world of work. We are recording this first series during the COVID-19 lockdown in the UK, so we're focused on ideas to help support teaching and learning during this time. Therefore, the audio quality may be variable as we had to record this remotely. In this episode, I chat to Nick Brown, the head of MFL and Extended Project Qualification at Lincoln Castle Academy, and Dr. John Taylor, Director of Learning, Teaching and Innovation at Cranley School, Surrey. They both share their experiences and the principles of project-based learning. They explain how to mentor students who are doing projects online while schools are closed, and how benefits of working on a project independently can set students up for future success. Hello and welcome to our podcast today. And I want to start off speaking to both of you about how you first came across project-based learning. And I'll start with Nick. Could you give us an intro about how you first came across project-based learning in your teaching career?
Yeah, I mean, I've been lucky enough to work in a number of schools, and several of them have been looking for a framework, if you will, to give students soft skills, research skills, independent skills, in order to improve the students as learners themselves through a variety of structures. And in a more recent school, I've been involved in the EPQ, which offers that framework. So I've worked with it in a number of institutions.
Thank you. And John, how did you first come across this project-based learning in your teaching career?
Well, my own interest, I suppose, stemmed from probably going back prior to when I started teaching in secondary schools. I was involved in university teaching. And okay. What I found there was that students were expected to be independent learners. But when I moved into secondary school, I noticed quite quickly that that was something they found immensely challenging. And that although they enjoyed the opportunity to participate in discussion and debate and to research more independently, that wasn't something that was easy to do within the mainstream curriculum. So I and a number of others put together a project-based course which linked ideas from science and philosophy, which was really designed just to give them an opportunity to ask questions more broadly and widely than the then exam syllabus is allowed. And that program was effectively one of the forerunners of EPQ going back a few years now. And some of the ideas that we learned about and experienced there fed into the development of EPQ nationally subsequent to that.
Thank you, John. I know during this podcast today, we're in a kind of a unique situation with regards to the COVID-19 viruses that are affecting us around the globe. And I was wondering if we could start with you, John, about how you're trying to teach your students for project-based learning during this time, because that is obviously a challenge for teachers at the moment. Is there any things that you have used recently that have helped you deliver project-based learning?
Yes, well, I think for me, whilst it is, as you say, it's a huge challenge for us all. For me, it's been, I won't say a seamless transition, but I will say that I've been helped by having already, I guess, a year or two ago now, spotted the potential of online learning platforms. We use the Google Classroom, but obviously there are others that lots of schools are using. And it became obvious to me that those have incredible power for project learning, both for the learners and for the mentors. And so having already worked in that framework prior to the recent crisis, in a way, it was quite an easy transition across, because if we were already working online, then effectively we were to some extent mentoring and guiding students through an electronic medium. And so there was almost a transition that was almost seamless. I mean, obviously there have been changes and there are some issues that we can explore. But I would say for me that having discovered the power of an online platform, that then really this has just been an opportunity to further prove that.
And John, in terms of kind of the advantages in this situation, do you think that although we've been forced into a kind of a remote learning scenario at the moment, is there anything you've discovered recently with the platform you use that has been helpful to you and that you found have been a real positive of the situation in terms of feedback to students or the way you give projects out? Is there anything you can share with on that?
Yeah, I'd say there. Yes, I would say a couple of things. I mean, the first thing is that I think that project learning and the online forum, the online learning environment, are very natural partners. They do fit together very well indeed. And my reason for saying that is that if you were trying to deliver a quote normal lesson in an online environment, then you face a whole number of challenges immediately to do with the fact that you're basically trying to get all students to do the same task at the same time to the same deadlines and then trying to provide feedback through a sort of fairly standard marking system. And all of that's incredibly difficult logistically. Whereas if you can contrast that to a move to a project type environment, then all of those problems go away. And in a way, the strength of project work, one of the key strengths of project work, is that students can work at their own pace. And that's so much easier, both for them in terms of feeling comfortable and in control, and for the teacher as well, who's juggling maybe the demands of keeping classes working with having to work from home, with having to look after their own family, quite possibly very, very difficult circumstance. And it's a huge advantage once you give learners the confidence and the freedom to actually work on their own challenges, work at their own pace with support from the mentor. So you can dip in and provide individual tuition, but knowing that the rest of your class is still progressing. And the other key for me has been, and this is unique obviously now to the fact that we're all working remotely, that just discovering that using maybe a function like a Google Chat or Google Meet just gives you that interaction and the face-to-face contact. And again, that's incredibly important. Going back quite a few years, I looked at some of the research on virtual learning. And one of the things that was really clear from that is that students do best if there's a combination of face-to-face and online. And I think it's very difficult if you make a transition to online learning without keeping some face-to-face element. But we can do that, you know, whether it's even if it's just a message in the lesson saying, how's it going? It doesn't have to be a full video call. Just the fact that the student knows there's a teacher who's still there, listening, watching, ready to help. It's very, very effective, I think.
Thanks, John. I was going to ask Nick the same, really. I mean, in terms of the advantages, is there any things that you've kind of learned in terms of the online experience that you'll definitely keep even when we're back in kind of the normal scenario of things? What kind of things have you found and thought, well, I'm definitely going to use that because why drop something that works so well in this kind of project-based idea? Could you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I'll come in first of all with the technology. We don't use Google Classroom. We use a competitor, for want of a better word. And what we've found is the two-way dialogue is vital for the feedback, etc. But we realised, even though we had the programme before, we weren't using it to its full potential. What this has really made us do is reflect how effective it can be. We have set a rule that teachers will feedback within 2 days because obviously there's the daily lives of the students to consider, but also those students remaining in contact with their teachers, knowing that they are still cared for and that there is someone looking at the work that they're spending time doing. Now, from an actual project-based work point of view, one of the things we've done is set a learning menu, if you will, a series of tasks. And what we found is for the students to have the opportunity, you know, some of them are maybe 12, to have the opportunity to dig deeper into some aspect of that that really is interesting to them, has brought out some fantastic work that we might not have seen with routine, normal inverted commas homework, if you will. So that is certainly something that we will be continuing, that giving them that bit of freedom. And of course, along with that freedom for that slightly longer research, we feel that the students feel a lot more comfortable. We don't mind if they're researching on their iPhone or typing it up in their pajamas. I mean, nobody knows. But what it's enabled them to do is have an opportunity to shine a little bit.
That's great. I was going to ask you about also, Nick, in terms of parental support. Are some parents concerned about online learning in terms of that contact with teachers? Is that been something that anyone's raised, or is that something you've not really experienced in terms of where you are based in Lincolnshire?
I think what we're having at the moment is the majority of our parents, all the online comments I've read and received myself, are incredibly supportive that we're doing our best for the young people, and we are responding to them and we are giving them feedback to give them a sense of normality and to keep developing them as young people. There are obviously concerns with technology. I think it's been fairly well documented. Sometimes the computers have just stopped working, so school has had to support parents where we can, and sometimes broadband isn't always effective. But again, if we're using those forums for a conversation or a two-way email dialogue, maybe with the whole class, a class discussion dialogue in a conversation has been useful, and parents have supported us in that.
That's brilliant. I was going to ask you also, Nick, in terms of the age group of when I'm thinking about project-based learning, I do kind of think back to my teaching career and think, oh, that's something just the A-level students do. But could you or have you got an experience of project-based learning when you're thinking even Key Stage 3? Have you been successful at all with those younger years, or is that not something you've kind of experimented with?
Yeah, we've gone as low down as year 7, so 11 and 12-year-olds. I quoted a 12-year-old earlier because I know exactly the piece of work I'm thinking about, where my own subject, MFL, they were very, very keen to focus on a school that is a partner of ours in Guadeloupe and find out a little bit more about an area of France, because it is part of France that's slightly off the beaten track. Now, what this 12-year-old produced, going off on their own, talking about the economy, what you should see there if you have the opportunity, was really heartwarming. So those children have the school, those skills. They just need the opportunity sometimes to bring them out. And I think what this current teaching atmosphere has done is given those. And just because they are a bit younger, they certainly have their own interests. They certainly have their own minds. And if we begin earlier, you're putting in the stepping stones for deeper and deeper study to ultimately prepare them for the job market or university.
Brilliant, thank you. I was going to ask a similar question to John as well. When you're thinking about, number one, John, do you do project-based learning for Key Stage 4 and Key Stage 5? And if you do, do you find your students, once they've had a go at project learning, do you get a lot of uptake in terms of do many of those students then carry on and then choose a project-based learning topic for their Key Stage 5, or do they do one or the other? You know, is it kind of does it transition quite nicely between the key stages?
Yes, it does transition, and I mean, my experience would chime in very much with everything that Nick said. If you start at a young age, you can introduce project work. One of the things that I've learned is that it doesn't really matter whether they're aged 8 or 18, they ask similar questions and they go about the process in a similar way, and the challenges and the opportunities are almost identical. So we introduced project work to our year 7 and 8 students as well at our prep school a number of years ago, and that laid a foundation. So that means that they're then coming into the Key Stage 4, Key Stage 5, having learned a few of those skills already and having that mindset. And I do think, as Nick said, it is all about that. It's about showing learners that they can take charge of the learning process, and that they will almost certainly, if they can find an area or a topic area that interests them and that they feel they engage with more readily and willingly, that's almost certainly going to lead to better learning. So and to answer the other part of your question, at Key Stage 5, we haven't made project mandatory, but we have, I guess, 85 or 90% of our Key Stage 5 learners now doing a project. And I've even got some who are lining up to do a second one, having completed their first and enjoyed it.
Sounds brilliant. In terms of the way you kind of choose a project, so I'm thinking, ask this to John, in the way you construct things, I'm thinking back to my university days many years ago, in terms of whether you give people like the free choice to say, here is your general subject, try and think of something you'd like to do within that, or do you, in my university experience, you had an option of maybe looking at a list of 20 that they, you know, that particular department was looking at. How do you find either approach works, or do you give your students a bit more guidance than others, or is it just kind of a free for all and you know, how do you guide them in the sense of the direction of their project or the project title?
Yeah, that's a big question. There's quite a lot there. But I mean, briefly, I think I would distinguish a little bit between project work where it's done as part of a mainstream curriculum subject, and then the kind of extended projects that we might do where the learner is given almost completely free choice. So if it's within a curriculum setting, then obviously the teacher has in mind they want to address certain topics. And really the challenge then is to frame the questions that you ask in such a way that you can sort of steer it towards a topic area, but still allow significant freedom for the students to respond. So, you know, for example, I might be working with, I teach some physics. I might be working with a physics class, and I want them to look at energy resources, energy efficiency, energy resources. But I can give them free choice how they then tackle that task. Do they make a slideshow? Do they make a Spark video? Do they want to do mind maps or posters? So you can give an element of freedom within still having a guided sort of framework in place. Outside that, if they're doing an extended project or a higher project, foundation project, then really the choice is much, much more in their hands. And here I really do encourage them to go as far as they dare to go in really relating to their own interests. And many, many of them are nervous and think, oh, I've got to do an essay, I've got to do a written project. And you say, well, no, you know, if your big thing is film and video, make a film. If you're absolutely mustard keen on engineering, go and make a new mountain bike. Don't just assume it has to be something that's sort of traditional and academic. And that's something they don't find easy. And I think that whilst you want to give them maximum freedom, there are still some constraints that we have in place. And one of those is the fact that it has to be a research project. So I will always encourage them to come up with their own ideas, but then gently steer them in a direction which takes them to something that I know will work in terms of there being available research materials and a sort of recognisable process at the right level. So the answer is, that's the long answer. The short answer is we try to give them as much freedom as we possibly can within the constraints of whatever framework we know is in place educationally.
That's brilliant, thank you. What do you think about that, Nick, in terms of like the beginning of the learning journey, for want of a better phrase? Do you ever find that you've got students who are really keen to do some project work, and but they're not, it's quite difficult for them to pin down an idea? Is there anything you kind of do in your early sessions where you're talking about projects, about not limitations to what they can do, but how they may think about what topic they might want to choose, or that area? Is there anything you do in those first few lessons that kind of kicks off the process for your students?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I will distinguish at this stage, just like John has done, within a curriculum area, say my languages, it's very clear, obviously they're constrained by where that language is spoken or an aspect of culture. But when you go genuinely into the open project work, which is what we're discussing here, in my previous school, we found out that the students very much wanted reassurance, actually. They came and they asked the question of, what do you think of this? And it was very easy to throw it back at them and said, well, what do you think of it? Why? But again, the early lessons are preparing them to find a topic. First of all, reassure them that they genuinely are in the driving seat, but prepare to find a title and a topic that allows for debate and discussion, and that allows also, we found, to get the students to break it up into milestones or chunks, because the big idea must be made more manageable for them, I find, to give them goals to work towards. So almost some sub-questions, if you will. And obviously, the EPQ has a mark scheme, a very easy to navigate framework. But even in those early lessons, without referring directly to that, that's not important at that stage. It is about saying to them, how do you know you've been successful? What are you trying to get out of it? And obviously some topics are just, they're just too shallow, or there's not enough known about them yet. So we really want to encourage them to get their teeth into something with a bit of bite to it. So it's those early questions, really. That's what we prepared them for, and giving them confidence to find something that they feel comfortable with, and confidence to go with it.
Thank you, Nick. I'd also like to ask you about, not looking at specific type of qualification particularly, but when you're thinking about the project itself and you're setting a timeline, whether it be a very long project or a shortened project, do you discuss with the students when you are going to check in with them, and do you give them specific deadlines, or are you a bit more free and easy, I suppose, in terms of do you wait there for them to come and see you about things, or would you say to your students, I would really like to see just some feedback on that project on this date, like you would in, I guess, we're talking about future skills in a work environment. You know, I'm expected to check in with my boss at certain times to give them a progress report. Is that how you manage your students, or do you take a different approach, Nick?
Personally, in projects, I quite like the idea of, oh, great, I'll hear from you in a couple of weeks. I think that's good to give the students the reassurance that you are there to check in and you are there to help and support them. However, some students very much want it almost written down, and they design their own plan. The introduction will be done by then. This will be done by then. But other students, by very nature of who they are, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with this, it's how I work, do their reading first. I'm going to find out things in support of this question. Then I'm going to find out if there's a counter argument to this question. And that's fine as well, so long as each time a teacher or even a mentor it needs to be there with the EPQ or any other project based learning to say, here's where you are so far. And it goes back into some of the work of some educationalists like Dylan William or Rob Coe. Let the student run with it, but also be prepared to give them that feedback to enable them to get to the next level in order for them to keep doing. That's what I found makes the difference. Agree some kind of timeline, be flexible within it.
Okay, thank you, Nick. What are you, John? Do you like the idea of students being as autonomous as they can be? As they say in many work reports, is one of the key things in terms of happiness in work, is there's that level of autonomy. Do you let them give you a specific, when are you going to check in with me? Or are you a bit more rigid? Like I might have been as a teacher and I'd say, well, I definitely want to see you in September and that kind of. Are you a bit more flexible in these kind of project-based learning? How do you feel about that?
It does depend a little bit on context, I think. And I think it also depends on the number of learners. So I'm overseeing a team of 15, 20 teachers or mentors looking after 100 or so students. And there, I think if you're sort of dealing in bulk, then having a framework of milestones is valuable, partly because it means you can keep track of how everybody's getting on at sort of a general level. Partly as well, I think students, I think they feel they value having a framework there, even if they are going to be independent and individual within the way they interpret that. So I'll give you an example. I actually sort of chunk the extended project up into the number of words I expect to see per week. And if I calculate the number of weeks they've got, then I can say to them, I'd expect to see 250 words a week of your EPQ. Now that's not a hard and fast, you've got to do that. It's not a same rule for all, but it does provide a little kind of, it provides a little checkpoint. It means I or a mentor can go and say, okay, we managed 400 words this week, we're doing really well. Or, oh, I see you haven't written anything yet, is everything okay? And as Nick says, that may well be because they've got to do a lot of reading around before they get into that process. So having a sort of framework that just sets some, lays down some milestones, lays down some expectations, I think is helpful. And then being flexible and individual about how you interpret that. And being aware, as Nick said, that all learners do learn differently. And all projects are different as well. I mean, some projects are going to require literally hours and hours and hours in the workshop or in the art studio before an enormous amount gets written on the page. So whereas somebody who's writing probably can start writing fairly rapidly. So I think we have to be a little flexible, but I think having a matrix of expectations plus some milestones has got value.
Nick, would you like to add something to that?
Yeah, I was just thinking one of the things about that milestones framework, John, and I think along the similar lines, is that actually if somebody is really struggling, because we all know that we've all been there where you can't see past a problem, the teacher can intervene and say, well, that's okay. let's just shift your research slightly, or how can we get around it? And that's part of the learning experience as well. But without that framework, which I always see as a reassuring almost stepladder, without that framework, that early intervention could be missed and a child pretty unhappy, which is not what we want at all.
Yeah, of course. I was going to ask John a question, and this is kind of based on my own background, I suppose, a bit of a biased question. Apologies to Nick, but I'm going to ask you a question about science, and specifically with remote projects. And my first thought when I was thinking about project-based learning and the way the students are obviously going to interact and maybe get data, have you found any difficulties in terms of setting up a science project? Because I'm thinking about the kind of the physical lab equipment you might need possibly for certain types of research. Are there ways around that? Have you asked students to do different things? Maybe have you got any experience of those kind of challenges?
Yes, I can say a little bit about that. In fact, as I said right at the outset, some of the issues here were already issues for many learners and for some schools before we moved into our current remote learning world, because frankly, access to scientific equipment varies from school to school, and it's not at all unlikely that a student might get very interested in a question which frankly their school is very unlikely to be able to resource in terms of lab equipment and access to data. So one of the things which I think works here is to emphasize that whilst it's wonderful if you do have access to a laboratory and you can get your own measurements, you don't have to use your own measurements. The heart of a scientific investigation is the thinking process, and that's what we're really interested in students learning. You know, how to think your way through a scientific investigation, how to frame your own hypothesis, how to test it, how to iterate into a new experiment maybe. And that can be done using public data. If you go on, there's plenty of data sets out there now in the sort of public science world. So a good example would be a website like Zooniverse, which has got access to a vast range of different channels of data coming from real science that real scientists out there in the field are supplying. And this is all raw and unanalyzed. You could get a rich data set from that and do some fantastic scientific investigation, even without having to leave the comfort of your own living room. So I think that's one route that could be taken. Another is perhaps at a slightly lower level would be to use some of the fantastic online simulations. Yeah. I'm thinking now of the absolutely marvelous, and all science teachers I'm sure will know this already, the FET simulator from I think one of the American universities set up as a really rich tool for doing project-based investigative learning in the classroom or outside. And I've used that very effectively with my Key Stage 3, Key Stage 4 students. Set up a skate park, simulate it, get the data, and off you go. So you don't need, you don't need a lot of tech, and you don't need a lot of lab equipment. And one final source, of course, is people. And very significant number of the investigations that my students have been involved in, or that I've seen, have been based around social science type investigative questions, where a questionnaire survey or a series of structured interviews is used, again, to generate meaningful data. And you can do some good statistical numerical analysis with that if you're at Key Stage 5 level. The short answer is, don't worry if you haven't got the tools to actually generate your own data and do your own experiments. Go looking for these other environments that will provide that for you.
There are ways around that. Thank you. I've got a different question for you, Nick, but do you want to add something to that before I've got another question for you, Bill? Do you want to add something to what John was saying there?
Yeah, I was just going to say my children at home at the moment, they're being busy, but they're doing their own little science experiments. We're counting the number of plantains in the lawn to calculate how much weed killer I need. I'm very proud of myself for that one. And we're also growing beans, and we're about to plant some more seeds. Bit early for certain beans, but in little jars in the kitchen at the moment. One's in the dark to see whether it'll grow. One's not been watered to see whether it'll go. Now, I've got a theory on that one, but they're discovering for themselves, one of them is six, of exactly what's going to happen. And so really, it's look for the opportunities within your own home, potentially. Not that I'm suggesting you rip out the electrics, nothing like that.
Yeah, that sounds good. I've got my kids seeing which is the best wax for my car this week, so I'll report back to you about that once I found out. But there's lots of opportunities, definitely. I was going to ask you, Nick, I was thinking about specifically kind of Key Stage 4 students. Yeah. I think back to my teaching careers, and I was thinking about those students who are, let's say, they're not as academic as many, and I kind of think project learning, the way it was pitched, possibly as quite an academic option. Have you ever had students who maybe are that kind of student who then go on to work, you know, in a job they want to do straight away, or they work for their dad or their mum's firm, but they still do the project-based learning, or is it mainly the academic child that can get a lot out of it? Is there things that you can, because we want to try and focus on the future-ready skills, are there things within that project-based learning that could really help them if they're going to start in a world of work?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, for a start, this is a good opportunity genuinely to transition into a traditional A-level, to sharpen some of those skills, but obviously far more roots over there. What the project-based learning does, it gives you autonomy. The student, the researcher, that's what you are. You're a researcher. You choose the end product and you choose the project focus. So we very often think about projects being a many thousand word essay. I remember my MA and thinking, oh, I'll never get to that word limit at the end. But there are other ways of doing it. And then look at the skills beyond that, because it doesn't have to be a long essay. You've got research, you've got discussion, you've got listening to counter argument, you've got writing for an audience, communicating effectively, organisation, perhaps for some a little bit of self-discipline to make sure they're reaching that, as John said, 250 words a day, or however many minutes in a presentation planned out, or lines in a script, whatever it be. And I think all of those, no matter what job people go on to do, we're in a career now where the students that we're teaching will probably be working over 50 years and have three careers. So what are the skills behind that that prepare them for that flex, for that change, for the researching a new job, for the technology that hasn't even been invented yet that they will be using in the workplace? And this is what project learning does. It says, well, sit back, do some research, think about it, and yet ultimately get a qualification if they choose to write it up according to a framework. But this gives you a framework to improve as an individual. So it's not just about learning for the school, it's about learning for life.
That's brilliant. Thank you very much. And I assume that, you know, that independence is going to be great if they decide, you know, their further training is an apprenticeship rather than academic-based learning. And I think it's got a lot of positives within there. I was thinking about a conversation we had before the podcast started the other day, talking about research, and I was thinking about you both mentioned trying to move away from just using Wikipedia, and I think you, Nick, said that you can actually use the old-fashioned books that are still in the library. I know maybe at the time, at the moment we're in lockdown, we can't get to the libraries, but you had an example whereby you didn't have to straight away just go straight to the internet, use Wikipedia. Could you give me just a little overview of another way to approach these kind of this learning?
Yeah, absolutely. I was discussing this, and my eldest daughter is 14, and there's a couple of books on the shelf about the ballet. I used to live in Russia. I was very privileged. She's been dancing in ballet for 11 years. She's missing it desperately. What I have learned, and very recently, is that there are quite a lot of ballet classes online, which make my life a little easier. But she started picking up some of the books and thinking, well, actually, there's quite a lot in there. I didn't know about the history of certain ones of these ballets and certain ballet companies. So it was just fascinating. Books are there. It goes back to what we've already said, using the resource what's around you. Some people will have those books. Could a book be a scientific research piece? How many words per page? What is the most common word in the English language used in this book in this time? Whatever it be, you can get data sets from those, as well as the traditional read, because reading, no matter what stage in life you are, is important. Get some ideas from those books.
Sounds brilliant. So there's options with a good old book, and I'm glad to hear that is the case. I was going to ask, just to kind of finalise things, really, I'd like to hear about some interesting projects. So I'll start with John first. Can you think back, because I know John's had quite a rich experience in project-based learning and been also involved in development of qualifications as well in this sphere. In terms of your students, John, are there things that have kind of really sparked interest in you, and you thought that if someone had told you beforehand that a student would think about research on X, Y, or Z, that you wouldn't think they would choose that? Is there anything highlights for you from students that you've seen across the years?
Gosh, it's difficult to know where to start. I think the thing that never ceases to amaze you with the project journey for all students is the moment you get to at the end of the course where they're asked to do usually a 10-minute presentation, and you just discover so much of the journey that you didn't necessarily know about. So I'll give you one example of a student from 2 or 3 years ago who set himself the task of building a motorbike for less than, I think his budget was something like £650. And what was absolutely extraordinary about that was that, I mean, obviously you learn a little bit about the process. I mean, I'm no engineer. I learned a little bit about the process as he was doing it. But it was actually during his final presentation that it all came together, and I just saw, you know, everything that he'd done. Things like teaching yourself wiring using YouTube tutorials, you know, sticking a battery onto a wire at one end and having a torch light at the other to see which see where the sort of connections were. Even sort of getting it working, driving around the field, and having I think his brother was filming with a drone to actually get a little bit of footage of it. Amazing. And yeah. A project is a process as much as a final product. Mm. And all of that rich process, all of those wonderful skills that he developed, and even though I'd been talking to him more or less on a weekly basis about this project, there's so much had gone on that I just wasn't aware of until he just stood and explained all of this in his final presentation. So that, you know, that's one example. I've seen creative work in expression, art expression. Students from a couple of years ago who did immersive theatre based on The Great Gatsby, and took one of the sixth form common rooms and transformed it into a kind of American bar, and then invited parents, staff members, her friends to come in, and there was a sort of murder mystery effectively that unfolded. While she was in the characters narrating and guiding us through this, and also directing, producing the entire thing, videoing it. Again, I mean, work, it's breathtaking. It's absolutely breathtaking what sometimes is produced, and you really have no idea until the very end of the process just how much has gone into it. And it's true, I think, of all of us. I think of the projects I did at school myself. They're the most personal and most meaningful parts of the learning journey, because a project is personal. It's your response to your challenge or your question. Those are just a couple off the top of my head. I could mention many more, but
yeah, thank you, Charles. That's brilliant. And Nick, any highlights for you over your years doing the project work? Any things that you think, oh, wow, that's a really great idea that you didn't really think that would come off, or that you thought was an unusual topic to kind of something to be challenged with?
Well, I'll talk about one that should have been taking place in a few weeks, actually. My school was very, very lucky enough to be awarded quite a substantial grant for students, particularly those first generation potentially going to university or maybe haven't travelled abroad that much, to go to Qatar and to spend time in a school in Qatar, as well as getting a deeper understanding of the Qatari culture. We managed to find that funding. We were incredibly pleased, very, very excited by it. And it's been delayed in the current climate, but it will take place. And one of the students was very much, right, this is a country I don't really understand. I want to understand it. And this will be my project. And I'm going to do some interviews while I'm there, and I'm going to come back. And this was someone who'd grown from quite a shy individual to saying, I want to really deeply understand a different culture. I thought that was just marvellous, because what she'd actually done is thought about it as a journey, because that's what it is, and thought, I'm going to use a real life opportunity to get the best out of it and to show how I've grown as an individual.
Thank you. That's great. I really appreciate talking to you this afternoon, and you've given us a great insight into project-based learning and what students can get out of it. And the fact that although there are many challenges in this this lockdown period, which I'm interviewing you in, which we know won't last forever, but it's really been convincing in terms of what students can get out of it, and that it's a worthwhile activity in terms of not just their experience in school life, but also preparing them for their future after school, which is a great and positive thing. So thank you very much for joining me this afternoon.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode on project-based learning. Keep an eye out for more podcasts in the series coming soon.